Hello and welcome to episode 14 of The Future of Drug Discovery. In this episode, we speak with Ashwini Gogare, Head of Artificial Intelligence and Automation in Drug Discovery at MilliporeSigma, the global science and technology group at Merck, responsible for setting up the AI-powered drug discovery and automation portfolio as an entrepreneurial venture across life science and healthcare. Ashwini is a leader in transformational drug discovery technologies with extensive experience in software development, new business incubation and software product sales. Ashwini has previously led strategic initiatives to identify transformative AI technologies for drug discovery applications and successfully built and launched a new AI-powered drug design solution named Addison. She was also responsible for the global services and commercial licensing of Cynthia, MilliporeSigma's flagship retrosynthesis software product. We're excited to take this opportunity to hear what's happening at the forefront of entrepreneurship and innovation in AI drug discovery as we discuss Ashwini's pioneering work at MilliporeSigma. And lastly, we'll be retracing Ashwini's career journey. Enjoy.
Hi, Ashwini. Thank you very much for joining us today. I would like to start the conversation by asking, what were the key points in your life that brought you to this current role?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. We've known each other for some time, but we haven't had a chance to exchange our thoughts on some of these key topics. So great to be here. What brought me here and into AI and drug discovery? Well, I'm a scientist at heart, as a trained chemist, chem informatician, and a photobiologist. I was always passionate about how we could leverage new technology to drive better therapies for patients. And so during my research in oncology, which was a key area for drug discovery, it always brought the question, how can we bring these therapies? How can we build better therapies for these patients that are in their terminal stage? And so as we see this AI and automation bringing significant development in this field, that is what excites me the most on how could we leverage these technologies to drive successful drug discovery.
Fantastic. Would you say that you plan that one day in the future you would be the head of AI and automation in this beautiful company? Or it somehow happened more organically?
Very organic. I'm driven by the impact that I can create for the patients and in this industry. And so AI and automation, we're seeing a lot of development in only very recent years. And so as we started seeing the significance and the potential of these technologies to drive impact in drug discovery, that's what piqued my interest the most. When I joined the Cynthia team on this MilliporeSigma as part of the Cynthia product, it was very eye-opening to see how machines could be trained to design retrosynthesis, which we did as scientists, and how they can empower us. And so that was the motivation, that was the inspiration to say, can we go beyond that and use this AI as well as automation to designing of these molecules? One of the important innovations was protein folding with AlphaFold, quite significant development in this field. Now with ChatGPT coming over, how can we train large language models like the GPTs of the world to design chemistry around it? So these are super, super exciting topics, and I'm extremely passionate. That's what drives me towards this.
As one person following your career in the past couple of years, there's a lot of progress, not individually, but also around the organization. How do you see that evolving? How big is the team? What is the scope? How do you organize that work? How do you decide what goes in and what you should focus on and what not to?
Yeah, so in terms of the team, I would say we have a good mix of data scientists as well as subject matter experts, which means computational chemists, computational biologists, and drug discovery experts. This trifecta or trilingual expertise is super important. These teams usually have in the past worked in isolation, but the convergence of these tech expertise together is super important. So essentially a data scientist working very closely with a computational chemist to build models that can produce output that is scientifically valid. And that needs to be validated by a drug discovery scientist. I would say trilingual or bilingual expertise is super important. And so we've been training our data scientists to know drug discovery, to learn drug discovery, And we're having our computational chemists or scientists to understand data science and how data could be used to answer to some of the questions they're asking. And so that, to me, has been a beautiful synergy. And we're training most of our scientists to be discoverers.
Let's put a pin into that because I have a few questions around it. Going back to the scope of the work you do, I imagine you helping multiple departments under this big organization. And everybody's asking maybe a slightly different thing. They come up with new ideas. AI seems to be a solution for a lot of things. How do you decide which projects to prioritize?
So we build solutions for not only our internal healthcare, but also external pharma companies. And so Addison, our AI-powered drug discovery software, the inspiration to build this software came from questions or challenges in today's drug discovery that the med chemist faced. So most of the med chemists and computational chemists have the challenge of how do we make drug discovery efficient? How do we make this design efficient? And how do we search through a library of more than 10 to the power 20 molecules within a matter of seconds or minutes? And this is a very challenging problem. The second problem is how do we train these large language models or leverage these large language models to develop drug-like output? They always say garbage in, garbage out. And if you leave these models just to generate randomly, they're going to try to produce very complex molecules, but that are not really drug-like. And that is super important, how you train these models to get the right scientific output. And overall, how do you design more drug-like candidates with synthesizability into account? Because at mm-hmm. the end, you can have thousands of compounds, but if you cannot make them, they're they're a good theory on paper. And so those were the key problems that our med chemists came to us and said, hey, can we find a solution that will address this? And that was the inspiration on how we prioritize projects, how we decide which areas to focus on, how to build solution. And that's how we built Addison as well, that now leverages the generative models, has the ability to search chemical spaces, as well as do retrosynthesis into account.
If you were to say, I'm sure there are multiple success stories surrounding Addison, but is there one that comes to your mind that you want to highlight?
I would say in building Addison, there were many challenges and many success stories that we look back and look forward to. And one of the important aspects was how do we incorporate pharma's proprietary data into these models? So you can build most of these models based on public data sets. And these public data sets have usually only positive data because everybody's publishing only successful work. But the important aspect is to have the negative and positive data together to drive robust predictions. And this was the biggest missing factor in many of these models that are available. And so we said, how do we incorporate both positive and negative data that is experimentally proven? That was one of the successes that we actually developed a method on how to incorporate pharmaceutical experimental data, which is robust, proven experimentally, and has both positive and negative data set to drive successful outcome. So I would say that is one of the biggest successes for Addison in terms of its robustness and in terms of its predictability.
I mean, obviously, it requires building a strong trust-based relationship with Big Pharma to collect that kind of data. And so have they had this data before, or after you convinced them the value of it, that they went back and created it?
So they had this data for the last 30 years. I'm very fortunate to work in this organization because we have our own internal healthcare. And so we have the data that they have been generating for the last 30 years. And the pipeline and success of our pipeline is a testament to the quality of data. So this was a very organic collaboration between the two organizations to say, how could we leverage the data they have been generated for so many years to derive more successful outcomes out of it? This is sort of our first step in this industry to say it's possible to have this data put into a product that could benefit others, not just our own healthcare, but benefit others, and sort of signal that other pharmas should join this effort as well.
There is a company called Melody and a few other organizations like that trying to pull data from multiple different resources and make it available for everyone's benefit. I don't know a lot of success stories. Obviously, it's something very difficult to do. Federated learning comes to mind and a few other technologies that enables that. What's your approach to it? Do you have a plan to really make it happen and bring other companies into this vision of yours so that they will be part of improving Edison and maybe similar tools?
Yeah, great question, Mira. And it's not an easy task, right? And there's no right or wrong answer to it. But I do very passionately believe that this is possible. So consortia like Melody that brought together some of these companies and trained the models on federated learning was a great example. But the challenge is, I think companies that have large set of data may not always benefit. So the ratio of the data that comes and the quality of the data that comes into the model are both very important. So the amount of data and the quality. When we decided to build this data into our models, we made sure that the data is robust, so quality is good, that quantity is sufficient to have reasonable outcome. And third, that the data is built towards the questions we're asking. So it is data that is based on drug-like molecules to help us design drug-like molecules. So that relevance of data is also important. And so we want to take the same approach now that we built Edison. Edison is a democratized tool, a tool that others could use and train on their data sets. And that will really open up the doors to exchange learnings from different data sets into a singular framework.
Very interesting. So how does Cynthia fit into that picture? Does it work? Edison, does it complement it?
Yeah, so very much complementary. That is one of our biggest differentiation and motivation as well. So as Edison and these large language models design these compounds, one of the critical aspects is to know whether these compounds can be synthesized. And that is where Cynthia comes into play from step one and the last step as well. Mm-hmm. So we take the synthesis accessibility score from Cynthia and integrate it into Edison's generative models, which means from the step one of design, our large language models take into account drug likeliness, they take into account structure similarity, and they take into account synthesizability. Mm-hmm. And it takes this key trifecta to build molecules. And so when the generative model builds the molecules, it already gives a probability of success in synthesis. And so that is really, really important because it saves a lot of time and effort as you go down the process of doing ADME properties or even docking. And then the second part where Cynthia really complements is in retrosynthesis design. So once you've designed these molecules, now you can get the retrosynthesis pathway. So with Edison and Cynthia together, it's a beautiful synergistic platform to do design and synthesis predictions together.
Do you see that your focus to be improving these components of that solution? Or would you be more going downstream and adding a few more features there?
I would say both. One important aspect is, like we said, we want to bring more learnings from better data into Edison and Cynthia platform so that we enhance our robustness and have more expansive therapeutic areas and applications for drug discovery for all scientists. The second part is, how do you get access to really good data? And that's where we want to expand. We want to integrate our platform into automation and create this closed loop automation ecosystem that would allow our models to be trained on experimental data generated from thousands of experiments.
You're predicting, obviously, binding drug-like properties, you know, and finding the best way to synthesize those. How about toxicity, function, efficacy? Those are the type of things you are predicting or designing for right now or well in the future?
Yes. So ADME properties is already part of Edison. And so when Edison designs molecule, it takes ADME properties into account. And those machine learning models are actually trained on that ADME data. And so in addition to synthesizability, the ADME is super important. Both from the synthesis data as well as ADME data is what we'll be looking at in terms of enhancing for Addison or Cynthia in the future as well. So all the experiments that we're referring to, high throughput experimental data, is going to be around both the aspects.
I should have asked it in a better way. So admin properties aside, how about off-target toxicity? Or will there be a focus on a particular indication where you try to drive a certain function by connecting to a intracellular target or something like that? Will there be a further focus in those areas? Or would you rather say that, no, we would like to make admin properties and the binding predictions and all of that. It's still not fully solved. And we would rather focus and perfect that part of the solution.
I see. I would say that we want to first focus on what we could do best before we expand our reach on many different areas. The aspect of ADME is still quite a tough challenge. So is synthesizability. And so we want to really solve that problem with much better quality. So being master of that rather than jack of different trades, we want to be a master of drug design when it comes to ADME properties and retrosynthesis. And once we have built a solution that could be used for all therapeutic areas, like I said, it's a democratized tool. The key part to it is the data. And so once the models are used, they're able to generate, in my opinion, very high quality drug assets. That's when we would call it a success and then try to address different areas as well.
There was this topic that I wanted to go back to and ask another follow-up question. Obviously, you have these three groups of people with different kind of backgrounds, cultures, skill set that you need to work together to be able to deliver and execute on this vision. They are talking in different languages. How do you make them understand each other? Is it an internal effort or an external effort? What has been your experience so far?
Yeah, good question. So I would say that they're both efforts, internal as well as external. So internally, when we hire data scientists, we actually have them work on projects that are very heavy computationally driven or, you know, MedChem driven. So they automatically learn the language as they work on real projects. There's no better way than to actually learn on the job or to learn from real experiments. So that's how we take the data scientists and enhance their expertise when it comes to domain knowledge, whether it's drug discovery, MedChem, and so on. On the other hand, we've been seeing a lot of computational chemists and MedChemists who are becoming AI savvy, data savvy, and there's curiosity for them to learn machine learning as well. So we have started programs where we train our computational MedChemist on machine learning models, on data-driven projects. And so in that process, they learn about how to build these models, how to train them, and so on. And because they both work in conjunction together, they always have this collaborative learn and teach approach with each other to get to that stage where both get, I would say, technical expertise as well as scientific domain expertise.
Maybe this is going to be too optimistic, but do you see people crossing the wet lab, dry lab barrier quite often as well, like purely wet lab chemists getting into the AI field, vice versa?
Yeah, and it's not too optimistic because I did it. I was very much a bench scientist. I'm a trained organic chemist. But the newer generation of scientists can see the power of computational techniques, of data-driven techniques. And there's no more an option between just wet lab or dry lab. It's actually both are essential. What we've seen in the past is computational chemists or any other data scientist who only worked on data could never see the outcome and the success of their outcome without experiments and without testing them in experiments. And a vet chemist never saw how they could leverage these newer techniques to derive robust predictions for them. So I think they both have seen the need, and it is very important. They both want to learn being able to design as well as make these compounds so that there's a whole holistic thought process about designing and making these compounds is becoming more and more important for the scientists.
That's great. I mean, I have a lot of questions on that topic because that's something that we are thinking really quite deeply on it as the team grows. I want to just pause on that one and then talk a little bit about the future of drug discovery. But maybe first, in the context of your organization, let me first begin asking, has there been a head of AI and automation position before you?
No, there hasn't been.
So it has been created around you. Okay. So obviously it's a new place, it's growing. Where do you see that going?
Yeah, so AI and automation is moving fast, and I would say lightning speed. There's been progress every day with new technologies coming our way. Like we said, ChatGPT, driving towards drug discovery and molecule design. It's the AlphaFold, getting better at protein folding and in designing as well. There are many new technologies that are driving this paradigm. But I see more of these tools democratizing, and having them accessible to everybody is important. We see that happening now. But the success is derived by the data that they are trained on. And so the future success is going to depend on better quality data, better quantity of data, and data that is relevant. And so these determine the success of the models, and how do we make sure that we get access to that data? And that's where I see automation really taking the lead, being able to generate high throughput experiments that can create that robust data, you know, quality data, as well as more relevant data to create autonomy. Right now, we're all leveraging AI and automation, but I think where we want to drive towards is more autonomous, self-reliant system that are learning from the experiments that they execute. So that's where I see the future.
What would you say the hurdle is there? Is it kind of a process IP thing? Like every single piece is in place, you just have to somehow make sure that they all work nicely together, and there is the funding and there is the integration of different tools? Or do you think it's a bigger effort? Like somebody has to design a special type of hardware with different principles in mind, working maybe higher throughput rather than sacrificing an amount of quality or resolution along the way?
Yeah, I will say the hurdle really at the moment is a cohesive integration of machine learning models into automation so that there's a cohesive data flow back as well, right? So this closed loop mm-hmm. integration of machine learning models with the automation. The second is, on the hardware side, there have been multiple liquid handlers and other hardware systems, but the integration of this hardware to get the scale and throughput has been another challenge. There are a lot of automation instruments, but there needs to be a beautiful pearl of strings, as we say, where the chemistry synthesis flows easily into biology. So there's design to biology directly. And that thought process still needs to be improved on how do you go from chemistry to biology very, very quickly. And the need to have pseudo-intelligence, i.e. the system needs to be able to analyze what are the starting points, which of these compounds have really worked, analyze it on its own, and decide out of the thousands of experiments that have been done, which few hundred have actually been successful, and testing only those selective ones so that there's much more efficiency within the system. And there's a pseudo intelligence built. And that is another aspect I feel that still needs some work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, great points. You know, I cannot wait to see maybe your labs. I don't know if you have a video of it. Maybe we can add to the footnotes of the show, but I don't know if you have completely built this thing or will build in the future. But it would be something worth probably sharing with a wider community.
Absolutely, absolutely. We don't have it at the moment, but we are working towards it. I think what is important, like I said, some of these challenges are opportunities as well. And where we are spending our time at the moment is to figure out how do we solve them to make sure that when the automation is ready, it's taken these three aspects into account.
Thank you. Ashwin, any closing remarks for our audience?
I would say that there are more things to be thankful for, as we've just celebrated Thanksgiving. And I'm more thankful to the teams and the community that are working on AI and automation and their belief in how this is going to drive the future. And I want this optimism to drive this community, it is a tough challenge to solve, but I think there is more hope. And I think that's where we as scientists are best equipped, is to take on more difficult challenges and put our heads together to solve it.
Perfect. Well, Ashwini, thank you very much for joining us. I learned a lot. I'm sure our audience did too.
Thank you, Mira. This has been amazing. And it's really great to catch up and share some ideas.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Future of Drug Discovery, brought to you by Murat, the co-founder and CEO at Antiverse and the production team here at Antiverse. We value your support immensely, and to help us continue growing this vibrant community, we kindly ask you to like, rate, and review the podcast. Your feedback fuels our mission for a better connected community. Also, before you sign off, did you know that every month we host a free live event with an industry leader and or expert in the drug discovery space? It's the perfect opportunity to meet other community members and to build your network. We even host a 90-minute virtual networking session to help bridge innovation in the community. To be notified about our future events, follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, or opt in for email updates using the form in the episode show notes. We hope to see you at our next event. Until next time.